Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I am an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, is the broke with expensive taste to my Chinese democracy, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm Azealia Banks, really.
Well, you're the Azealia Banks album, the long
out of all the rappers Azealia that have Banks. Like thrown out really controversial statements about gay folks, I'm Azealia Banks this morning.
I didn't say you were Azealia Banks. I said you're broke with expensive taste. I guess that isn't the nicest thing ever, but... I said that Chinese democracy. It was a long delayed album thing.
I'll be Dre's long lost album. Whatever the hell. Yeah.
You'll be detoxed. That's fine. You know what?
You meant nothing ill will from what you said. I know you didn't.
You know what's funny is that coming up later this week is the 15th anniversary of Dr. Dre's last album, Chronic 2001. So it's been 15 years since Dr. Dre first started teasing detox. Oh well. Oh, well.
Just keep on teasing.
Someday.
Keep on.
Well, Keith, we teased our listeners last week by saying that we have some special guests coming up. And you said if you've been paying attention to Year of the Booty. So we do not have Kim Kardashian, first off. I just want to clear that up.
If you've seen that magazine cover, you know what we're talking about.
It broke the internet as it was intended to do. Anyway, we do not have Kim Kardashian. We have Nick Jonas, though. We have Nick Jonas stopping by the Pop Shop podcast, which was great. I talked to him earlier this week, actually last week, about his new album and you know, being shirtless a lot and the moving on from the Jonas Brothers. It's a really great chat. We're going to get to that later in the show. We're also going to talk about the Hot 100. Taylor Swift is still number one, but we have some new entries into the top 30. And I want to go over a segment called The Week in Uneasiness. Speaking of, you know, actually, Azealia Banks is not in The Week of Uneasiness, which is great. But we...
For once, finally.
She did it. She released some good music.
You go, girl. Finally stop being slightly controversial.
Exactly. Great job, Azealia Banks. But we do have to call out Eminem, Nicki Minaj's video director, and... on a lesser scale, of course, than either of those people, Rodney Jerkins. We're gonna talk about all these people, but first, Keith, let's get the ball rolling. Billboard 200 albums chart. So finally, this week, it's been a crowded week of album releases. We've got some cool stuff. Last week on this week's Billboard 200 chart, I should say.
One yeah, this week's chart is kind of boring. Next week's chart will get really exciting.
Exactly. So you wrote about the chart. Taylor Swift once again number one. We're not, unlike the last two Pop Shop podcasts, we're not going to linger on Taylor Swift too much this week, but she is once again number one with the second biggest sales week of the year, only behind her own sales week of 1989 last week.
So 1989 is number one again for the second week with 402,000 sold in the week ending November 9th, according to Nielsen SoundScan. And that's, as you said, the second biggest sales week of the year. Of course, the biggest week was last week when she started with 1.287 million. She may even be number one again next week at the rate we're going. Her numbers are just so big. It's really hard to sort of compete with, you know, the 70,000-pound, you know, gorilla in the room named 1989.
So true. I mean, you saw it this week when it kind of got it wiped out. New stuff from Bette Midler and Calvin Harris both had top five debuts, but nowhere near what 1989 sold in its second week. So next week on the Billboard 200 album chart, we will have some new stuff populating the top 10. Probably we have new albums from Foo Fighters, Pink Floyd, and Garth Brooks. Those are the ones that I've underlined. Keith, out of all of those debuts, what will be probably be the top debut?
The top debut will probably be, industry forecasters suggest that, it's funny, my mouth makes a really funny shape when I do this voice, will probably be the Foo Fighters' new album, but it will not be number one. It'll probably debut at number two. But I think it could sell, you know, maybe 200,000 copies. I don't have the exact forecast, but that's the guesstimate that I have right now. Taylor could do, you know, maybe another 300 or somewhere in that vicinity.
Wow.
So yeah, she'll still be quite a chunk ahead of the Foos.
I mean, that's pretty, again, we're banning ourselves a little bit from talking about Taylor Swift since we focused on Taylor so much over the past.
Oh, come on.
There's so many other artists worth talking about. I know Taylor Swift's setting records and whatnot, but we got to say, like, the third week, to sell over 300,000 in a third week of release, as Taylor Swift may very well do next week, that's insane. I mean, to put it in perspective, only one album, Coldplay's Ghost Stories, I believe, has sold over 300,000 copies, or at least debuted with 300,000 copies in a single week this year. It's insane, man.
Well, you know, it is. And this is why we talk about Taylor Swift so much, is because you know, she's our Billboard Woman of the Year, and there's a reason why that she is. And you know, her last album did well, it did 1.2 million, then it did 344 in its second week, 344,000, and then did 196. So, you know, 1989 is holding up really well. So basically, everyone that was ever going to buy an album, they're just deciding to buy Taylor Swift's album instead of other albums that are out. Yeah.
So, Keith, let's talk about the Foo Fighters album for a second. Their last album, Wasting Light, I believe, debuted at number one in 2011. Sonic Highways is the new Foo Fighters album. It's an ambitious project. They went to, it's eight songs long. They went to eight cities to record each song and use the songs to kind of reflect the cities that they're recorded in.
It's a great concept.
It's a very cool concept. It's being paired with a HBO documentary, kind of, you know, taking on the, in eight parts, in eight installments, taking on the album, explaining how this album came together. So are these, I'm curious, because are these songs working at radio? Like, I believe the lead single is Something From Nothing, that at least that's the first one that came out. Is this like typical Foo Fighters performance going on right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, Something From Nothing is the top, the most heard, most played song on rock radio. It's number one on our rock airplay chart with nearly 17 million in audience. It's not on the overall radio songs chart, which monitors airplay across all formats of radio, but that's not that terribly unusual, because Foo Fighters haven't had a top 40 hit overall on all radio since 2000. 2000 with Learn to Fly.
Wow.
So they're mostly like a core rock act at this point, but they usually creep on with, like, you know, sort of a low-lying all format radio hit, but they have such sort of a core fan base. They don't really need top 40 radio because, you know, Dave Grohl is such a character. He's so charismatic. The band is so well known. They've been around for a very long time. They're a veteran act with a very core fan base. And as you said, they have this built-in marketing push, you know, from the documentary series. They have a very specific theme that's happening with the album. And they've even gone as far as to, release alternate covers of the album. If you buy there's eight different vinyl versions of the album, I think, or nine, one for each city with a different cover. The content inside is the same, but you can, you know, if you're a crazy vinyl head, you can get like each different, you know, cover and collect them all. So I mean, it's a cool concept, and I think that's probably helping generate some interest in it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of project where I heard Something From Nothing and I thought, well, this is a good song, but I kind of need it in the context of the rest of this album, because it's such a concept album. And people, you know, like you said, it's going to debut at number two behind Taylor Swift probably next week, but
you need a hook these days.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the hook. It's that, you know, this is, you want to take this little road trip across America with Dave Grohl and the rest of the Foo Fighters.
And I think, and just to end, the last thing about this I'll say is, you know, it worked very well, you know, in terms of sort of building the structure, the infrastructure for this album with the documentary that he did, Sound City.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, you really kind of got a feel of how passionate he is about rock music, and it made it very tangible to a lot of people. And I think that probably kind of laid the groundwork for this album in many ways.
So speaking of laying groundwork, Garth Brooks also put out an album this week, his first in many, many years. And again, Keith, it's not going to sell more than Taylor Swift 1989 in its third week, not likely at least. Maybe. Should be beaten by Foo Fighters. What's the sales projection for that one?
I don't have an exact one for Garth's new album, which is called Man Against Machine. But I think it's going to be somewhere in the 150 range ish. Okay. I think it's going to do about as well as the new Pink Floyd quasi all instrumentals album that just came out. You know, it's you know, Garth has made this a very sort of challenging record in a
lot of
ways,
exactly,
you know?
And that's what I wanted to ask about, just because the unusual way of releasing this album to retail. Do you think it's hurt him? I mean, first, I guess let's explain how this album is coming out. It's not like you could purchase this album on iTunes.
No, you can't. You can't actually purchase it on any digital service save for his own Ghost Tunes. I believe that's the name of the site. And because he's, you know, he wants to make sure that he sells it in the way that he wants to sell it, and he doesn't believe in selling his tracks a la carte on iTunes. So he has cut out, you know, basically the biggest retailer in the world from selling his album. So that's gonna hurt. However, as we've seen in the past. And also, you can buy this album at, you know, any retail store. Like, you can go to Walmart and Target and Kmart and Best Buy, and you can buy it on Amazon.com as a compact disc. As we've seen in the past, though, exclusive deals with physical retailers have often worked quite well. You know, AC/DC's Black Ice was a huge seller. One. You know, Garth himself has done exclusives with physical retailers. So, you know, but those were in the years past, and I think it might be more difficult now, especially because Garth has taken himself out of the picture for so long. He's been completely, essentially off the radar in terms of new music for a very long time. And I think that's kind of hurt him in a way, in terms of trying to sort of rebuild his career, you know, on the music scene.
It's just so hard. I mean, you see it very occasionally with an artist like Justin Timberlake. He was gone for 6.5 years, but still had people hungry enough for new music. And there are people hungry for new Garth Brooks music. It's just, you know, like you said, he's making it challenging for modern consumers to buy his product. And I understand why. I mean, this is his decision. It's his art. He can sell it any way he wants. But it's just, it's probably going to affect that number a little bit.
Yeah, I thought it was really, you know, and this is also his first studio album, his first new studio album since 2001. So that's like a generation.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's an entire generation of music fans and country music fans that don't know of Garth as, aside from being someone who made these hits in the 90s and basically. And I thought that was never more telling than on the CMA Awards last week, when Garth, who is a legend and is legendary, came out to present Entertainer of the Year, which is the biggest award of the night, and Luke Bryan won it. I think it's the first time that Luke Bryan has won it, and Luke Bryan is essentially the king of country music right now. He's young, he's got tons of hits, and when he accepted his award, he said, "This is the first time I've met Garth Brooks. Can I hug you again?" And he did. And I'm like, you know, I think that kind of tells you something right now, that the biggest, you know, one of the biggest stars in country music, and that night crowned Entertainer of the Year, had never actually met Garth Brooks, who was arguably the biggest music star, certainly the biggest male music star of the 1990s.
Unreal.
I think it's just such an interesting contradiction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is what you do when you not only don't release an album for a while, but completely remove yourself from the game. And now he's back with a new album, and I guess we'll see how it does on next week's Billboard 200 Albums Chart. So, Keith, moving over to the Hot 100, Taylor Swift still number one with Shake It Off. It's worth noting that this is now her longest run, not consecutively, but the most weeks spent by a Taylor Swift song at number one on the Hot 100. fourth week because We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. Her other number one single was only there for 3 weeks.
So and most people are surprised that she's only had two number ones on the Hot 100. So there you go.
Well, do you what do you think about Blank Space? Because the music video came out this week. I think it's a fantastic music video. Did you have you seen the Blank Space music video, right?
I have.
Oh, so cool, man.
It's great.
And I was kind of like, I was a little bit lukewarm on the Shake It Off music video. I kind of got it, but it was like, all right. But I think the Blank Space video directed by Joseph Kahn, it's so clever. And it's just fun. It's almost like it reminded me of like a little bit of like Blue Jasmine, Cate Blanchett a little bit. I know that's the vibe I got. But anyway, Keith, you think this video will have a big impact on this song? Do you see this? You know,
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, anytime you release a really super buzzy video, it's going to help you. I mean, you know, look at what happened with Nicki Minaj's Anaconda, with the Ariana Grande Bang Bang, Jessie J, Nicki song. You know, anytime you have a big buzzy music video that gets tons and tons of views, especially when it's released at the right time of the week, it can really help the chart fortunes. I don't know if that'll be enough to send it to number one necessarily next week, but I think, you know, it zooming into like the top 10 is completely attainable.
Yeah. So, I mean, Taylor Swift, all things Taylor Swift are doing well right now.
Taylor Swift, we're talking about her again.
Speaking of Bang Bang, Ariana Grande and The Weeknd, their new collaboration moves into the top 10 this week. Love Me Harder. And Keith, I mean, has this just been kind of headed up the Hot 100? It seems like it's been headed up really quickly and it's been latching on at radio, or did something cause this surge to push it in?
You know, I'm going to play a little ignorant. I don't know, but I can tell you that it's up across the board. It's up 19%, at least in terms of points on the Hot 100.
The video, sorry to interrupt, but the video came out, but I feel like
I like the way you're like, sorry to interrupt, I actually know the answer, Keith.
No, but that's the thing, is like the video, like it wasn't like that
it's the video.
Buzzy of a video, I guess. It wasn't like an Anaconda or like a Blank Space, like, you know. I mean, it was a cool music video. It did well when it came out, but I feel like it didn't really reverberate for days in the past week or so.
The bulk of the reason why it was up this week was because of its streams, and then it also had a huge jump in sales. So the stream, you know, the video streams, you know, in turn helped, you know, drove people to buy the song, and it also was gaining in radio. But it was really the sort of the 1-2 punch of the video causing people to buy it. So that's why it's in the top 10 this week.
Well, very cool. So congrats. Ariana Grande, amazing run. Now, I guess four top 10
I think
hits
it's her fourth top 10 this year, yeah.
Yeah, so
crazy. And no, and well, I won't go there.
anyway.
Yeah.
Also doing well this week, Selena Gomez is back in the Hot 100. The Heart Wants What It Wants, the lead single from her Greatest Hits compilation coming out later this month. Scores a top 30 debut. So, you know, this is kind of a one-off, and she is the end of her basically the end of her career on Hollywood Records. She's jumping to Interscope. So,
but won't her next album be like a joint venture Interscope Hollywood? Is that how they're gonna do
No, really?
Oh.
Yeah. So no, it's next one is just on Interscope. And did you see this video when it came out last week?
No, I know that she's. But I know it's. I know the vibe and the direction that you're about to go in.
You seem disappointed in yourself. It's okay.
I am disappointed in myself because I've seen screenshots of her crying, and I guess it's about Justin Bieber. I don't really know.
It's a little bit
not
obviously very very different situation, and I want to make that clear. But do you remember when Rihanna dropped the Russian Roulette video? And it was just like her like being very serious and this darkly lit song. And it seems like that's the kind of vibe I got from The Heart Wants What It Wants and its music video. Very, very tear streaked. Let's call it that. So, Selena Gomez and Keith, I guess we're going to be talking about this. Shawn Mendes, Something Big. Has that come up on your radar at all? Because I
know it exists. I've seen the hashtag. It actually debuts on the Hot 100 this week, by the way.
Where is it at? Do you know?
Number 92.
Okay. So I feel like this is a song. I don't love this song, but I buy all the Shawn Mendes stock you can right now, because this kid is going to be a big deal. He is opening for Taylor Swift in North America next year. And I mean, this song is Something Big. It's doing well on YouTube right now. The video came out yesterday on Tuesday, I should say. And definitely one to keep an eye on as well.
That opening slot on a Taylor Swift tour is really the primo gig that you want to have, because I mean, in the past, hasn't there been like Florida Georgia Line, I think, opened for Taylor, like Ed Sheeran opened for Taylor. There was like some other like pop act that opened for Taylor, like sort of a viral type. Who was it, Jason?
That's a good question, man. I don't know. Maybe we'll get.
I'll come back to it.
We'll come. We'll return to it. But Shawn Mendes, Something Big, now on the Hot 100. His last single, Life of the Party, had a top 40 debut, number 24, this past summer. So Keith, before we get to Nick Jonas, very quickly, man, let's spend a couple minutes talking about the week in uneasiness. We need like some bumper music for the week in uneasiness, like you have the Chartstat music, but. We don't have that right now, but so we're just going to do the week in uneasiness.
We don't. Bum, ba, bum, bum.
Yeah, just like a wah, wah. We need like a trombone slide.
Wah. Awkward.
So
Austin Mahone. That's who opened for Taylor. Sorry. There you go.
I thought that was part of the week in uneasiness. So it's just screaming Austin Mahone's name.
Awkward easiness.
So Nicki Minaj, her only lyric video, the song only featuring Drake and Lil Wayne and Chris Brown, got her in some hot water, got the video's director in some hot water because of its Nazi imagery, and always a great choice in 2014 to have Nazi imagery in a lyric video. I'm, of course, being sarcastic.
But it's just artistic license.
Yeah, so it's just kind of like an SMH moment for Nicki, not for Nicki Minaj. She came out and said, "No, obviously I wouldn't want to have any Nazi imagery." But it's more of an
obviously I wouldn't, but my lyric video has it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, who knows? Like in terms of the mechanics of a lyric video, how much you know input she had in the artistic direction?
Oh, please. After that cover story that we did on her, where she's talking how in control of her career she is and how many meetings and conference calls she had to have approved this, so she saw it.
Yeah, I'm sure she
saw
it. Not
like this slipped out and she didn't see it.
Didn't see it. Yeah, maybe she didn't make the connection. But the more like SMH, and this is the second time I'm saying SMH in this podcast, the SMH moment for me was the video's director came out and was like, and literally said, sorry, not sorry, and was like, what happened? The First Amendment doesn't exist anymore? As if anyone in the world is saying, no, you can't do this, like arrest this man, instead of saying, no, maybe, hey guy, maybe you shouldn't have Nazi imagery in a lyric video in 2014. It's just...
Yeah, I'm like, would he be so quick to defend someone who, I don't know, used a bunch of Ku Klux Klan imagery?
Yeah, exactly.
Or some sort of like, you know, lynching imagery? I don't know.
I know.
Maybe he wouldn't.
The moral of the story, ladies and gentlemen, don't use Nazi imagery in lyric videos in 2014 or any year beyond that, or any year prior to it. If you did already, just let it just stop. Moving on, Eminem. Eminem.
Eminem.
He, in a new Cypher video for in anticipation of this Shady 15 record, he compared himself to Ray Rice and then...
Always a good thing to do.
Always a great thing.
No. Right.
And threatened to... punch Lana Del Rey,
which that's sort of par for the course, punching pop stars that you don't like. I mean, he's kind of gone down that road before, but really the Ray Rice thing,
yeah, it's just, you know, like really? what do you even say to this? It's just so ludicrous and so offensive, and so
but it got him attention
and so stupid, and it did get him attention, it absolutely did, but it's just like, again,
it makes him edgy again.
And I just, you know, he's in this cipher. It's funny because in the cipher, everybody picked up on the Lana Del Rey line, but he made some horribly homophobic references to Anderson Cooper about like 30 seconds before the Lana Del Rey line. Yeah, obviously, Lana Del Rey is a pop star, so people latch onto that. But it's just the whole thing is disgusting, and I don't even know why we're talking about it. But it's
because it's disgusting, and we should be talking about.
Well, it is. No, I'm saying I don't even know why we're giving him the attention that he so craves by making a statement like this. But I guess the point of what I want to say is that I'm just tired of Eminem doing things and then saying, "Oh, I'm not going to apologize because there's not any fearful repercussions for them, I guess is my point. I mean, do you, like, I remember when, you know, his whole shtick of like playing a character and being like, oh, I'm not homophobic, this is just the character I play. But then do you, so he can use the F word and all this stuff, the homophobic F word, I mean. And then, you know, do you remember a couple years ago when he used the N word, or he was caught using the N word in some sort of freestyle, but then he said, oh, I'm so sorry. That's like, why is that not the character he's playing? Why is he scared of those repercussions? I mean, obviously, it's obvious that why he's scared of those repercussions, because the hip hop community is comprised of African Americans. It's just, it's so inconsistent and so laughable that it just doesn't make any sense to me.
So while you were talking, I found the Anderson Cooper lyric.
Yeah. And which we won't read right now.
Oh, I can't read isn't this on the Shady album that's about to come out?
It is not. No, it's part of the
It's not. Yeah. It's like a mixtape thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's out there, but we just can't talk about it because it's a family show. It's a family show. But if you felt that the Lana Del Rey lyric was kind of bad, you might think the Anderson Cooper lyric is even more horribly horrid.
Yeah, that's all the point.
It's all just a character. Exactly. It's just a character.
I'm sick of it. Anyway, so the last one, and again, I don't mean to group this with Nazi imagery and horrible, you know, domestic violence boasting, but a smaller uneasiness is Rodney Jerkins gave an interview where he said he's working on a 20th anniversary compilation. He wants artists to redo some of his biggest hits, and he mentioned that Jesse J and Ariana Grande would be taking on The Boy Is Mine by Brandy and Monica. So, Keith, what was your... We haven't talked about this offline. What was your first reaction when you heard this news?
You need to give it up. I've had about enough. It's not hard to see. You don't need to remake The Boy Is Mine with Jesse J and Ariana Grande. And I bet you that this won't happen.
You don't think so? I think it will. I think there's so much interest in it that I think it will.
No, it just seems like, you know, I feel like it's the Rodney Jerkins kind of like, you know, firing off, like, you know, blathering. Like, oh, we're going to do this. And so I'm like, I'm sure all of them are just like, we are. I mean, we may have mentioned that in passing in a meeting, Rodney, but I didn't really. I mean, do you have information on this that I don't, that it's actually a done deal and it's already been recorded?
No, I don't have any information on it. But I think that, first of all, I use the word uneasiness because it's just, what's the point? I mean, The Boy Is Mine is like a perfect song. Like, it basically would be like remaking, like, Pulp Fiction, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, you don't need, which came out 20 years ago, and you don't need to remake Pulp Fiction because the original is so perfect that you just, how are you going to improve upon it? I mean, I get it's like a tribute, but like, I don't know. And this is no, you know,
well,
this
it's,
is
no it's a tribute to a song that he produced.
Exactly.
That's the whole shtick. Like, he's getting current artists to redo his songs that he produced. And he produced The Boy Is Mine. He also mentioned how Sam Smith was going to cover Whitney Houston's I'm Not, It's Not Right, But It's Okay. Dark Child. So I think what's interesting, though, is that there is a generation of people, your generation, because I'm not in your generation.
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm not. This generation of younger folks, sort of in their 20s.
Us whippersnappers.
No. This is not an old man on the yard moment. Don't you dare. it's the idea of your childhood being robbed again, where he's like, oh, man, The Boy Is Mine is my jam. And like, it means something in your head. The same thing happened back when, you know, Mariah Carey and Luther Vandross remade, you know, Endless Love. And everyone was like, why are they remaking Endless Love? Diana and Lionel did it just fine back in 1980, 81 or 82.
Yeah.
And yet they did it again, like, you know, 10 or so years later. So now, you know, 10 or so years later, or a little bit more, we're going to get perhaps a remake of a song. And I think that's why it's resonating with the Twitter generation, because it's a song that came from their childhood. I don't particularly care that much. You don't need to screw with a song that's already perfectly fine. But hey, if you wanna, and they're game to do yet another duet together, sure, why not?
Hey, why not? Well, because...
Because they don't need to?
You know what? Yeah, exactly.
Because it's just going to be a yelling match between Jesse J and Ariana Grande on the song?
And I don't want to give any slight to Jesse J and Ariana Grande. Because, you know what? They can do what they want, and they've already released a very successful collaboration. If they want to do a sequel, go for it. It's just don't. The boy is mine. It's just hallowed ground. Come on. So, Keith.
It's funny how the boy is mine is hallowed ground. But anyway. I mean, hallowed of all ground. The songs in history, that's hallowed ground. Hallowed. That is like.
Did I say hallowed? I meant hallowed. Hallowed. It's not like hollow, like you would step on that ground and then
hallowed
like fall
ground.
Through. Hallowed ground. So,
and you know, when I said screaming match between the two, you know, they're just both known for sort of, they're both known for singing with an S-A-N-G. Jesse sings and Ariana sings, and it's going to be a lot of singing between the two of them.
Maybe, well, the thing is that the boy's mind is it's almost like a cordial discussion between Brandy and Monica.
Yeah.
And then this
and
would be
would
a
not
little
be
less cordial, a little bit more shrieking. So
yeah, all of the subtlety from sort of the hi, can I have a conversation with you? Yes. Oh, really? That whole vibe will be out the window,
violent.
And it's just like, yes. Girl.
Exactly. All right. So thus endeth the week in uneasiness on the Pop Shop Podcast. So Keith, let's do it, man. Let's get to our interview with Nick Jonas. So backstory of this interview. So Nick played 3 shows last week in New York City, and I caught up with him on the last one, and it was in Rough Trade in Brooklyn, and I caught up with him before the show to interview him for the podcast. So, you know, we sit down for 15 minutes or so and have a great discussion, and then, you know, we wrap up and I'm getting ready to leave. But, you know, he had some time to kill before his show, and there's Rough Trade is a new spot in Brooklyn that has ping pong tables up on the balcony. So Nick is poking around for a couple paddles, and me, I don't know if you know this about me, Keith, but I consider myself a damn good ping pong player. So I'm like, hey, man, I'll take you on. So he's like, all right. So Nick Jonas and I started playing ping pong.
That's exactly how I would have said it to you. All right.
All right.
That's how he talks. All right.
So we start playing ping pong. And I don't know how much you play ping pong, Keith, but any...
I don't.
If you play,
I have.
If you play ping pong, you need a little bit of time to adjust to... You know, the softness of the paddle and the construction of the table in terms of the material. You need a little bit of time to warm up and get, you know, your bearings. So
you're saying that he whooped you.
So the first game, I'm still collecting my bearings. He's a really good player. Let me just say that off the bat. He's a really good player. I consider myself a really good player. Like, I actually get cocky about ping pong.
There's so much preamble to you getting whooped by Nick Jonas.
So he whoops me the first game, right? He wins like 21-13, and I'm like, you know what? I was like, he deserved. And I'm pissed because, like I said, I'm cocky when it comes to ping pong. But I'm like, you know what? Took me. I'm shaking the rust off. I hadn't played in months and months. I was like, all right. Let's do a rematch. And I swear, man, I felt like I was gonna win that rematch. And he's sweating a little bit. It's a much closer game. It's 20-19, and then I flub the last point, and he wins 21-19. So Nick Jonas beat me twice in ping pong last week. I was very sad. I was happy for him, but I was very sad myself. He gave me like.
But I like the imagery of Nick Jonas sweating and playing you against
right.
in ping pong.
All right, he
sweaty Nick Jonas playing you in ping pong.
Well, the
you're
thing
the
is,
booty.
So I asked you're the booty. So I asked. It's funny because I came home. And I watched the show. The show was great. I came home that night, and my fiance, she was like, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "Like I should have won that second game of ping pong." Man, I'm still torn up about it a little bit. So anyway, I talked to Nick Jonas before we played ping pong. I talked to Nick Jonas about his new album, and which is great. It's self-titled and it's out now. And, you know, what finding his sound and moving on from the Jonas Brothers. And again, like I said, I asked him about, you know, the perks of being shirtless in a marketing campaign. So here it is, Nick Jonas on the Pop Shop Podcast. We are here with Nick Jonas on the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks for stopping by. You have a big week this week.
Yes, pretty insane.
Pretty insane.
But I feel like the last, you know, 2 months have kind of been that way. I've just been on riding the wave pretty hard.
What's been the highlight? What is the one thing that you take away from these couple months? Like, is it seeing Jealous rise on the charts, on the radio, like performances? What's number one?
I think it's a couple different things. I think one of the biggest things for me is experiencing a song grow in the way that Jealous has. You know, I think seeing people's opinions change of me, or just giving it a shot and then being surprised that they actually like it. You know, things like that that are really meaningful, you know, that you strive for as an artist. And yeah, it's been great and a totally new experience from anything I've done before.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so fascinating to me thinking about where you were like a year ago, and you know, the project goes on break, Jonas Brothers goes on hiatus, and then literally almost exactly a year later, you have this fully formed solo statement. I mean, can you describe feeling the way you feel now versus the way you were a year ago? Like, has it been a complete transition?
It has been a huge transition, and it really, I mean, is almost exactly a year from when the brothers decided to close that chapter. And, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like I had a vision of where I wanted to see it go, and knew that it would take some time. Didn't really expect it to for the tide to sort of turn as quickly as it has, and for, you know, us to be in this kind of new chapter, and just loving the ride, you know, and really enjoying every moment. And I'm thrilled to get this record out and to really sort of step out and make these statements.
It's funny, we had on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, we had Darren Criss come on, and he said that, you know, he was a huge fan of Jealous, of what you're doing, and he said something interesting to me, which was that he always knew you were going to make it as a solo artist. He didn't know what kind of style you were going to do, because you can do so many different things, but he always knew. So that got me to thinking, why this style? What made you kind of clamp down on this R&B, this very sensual vibe that this album represents?
I think it was about tapping into what came most naturally vocally. You know, I had done some songwriting, producing for other people, for other artists, and so, you know, the idea was there to touch on some of those things that I learned from that experience working with different writers and producers, and most of what we were doing was kind of in this lane, and so I just went for it myself, and it was a really natural thing, and you know, I feel like when I get up and sing, I'm the most comfortable I've ever been, because it's really feeling just like it's in the right spot.
I feel like the buzzword for this album is mature. Everybody's talking about, oh, it's Nick Jonas is more mature here. He's growing up. When you were putting this album together, did you have any kind of hesitations in terms of lyrical content, in terms of maybe, you know, dropping F-bombs, anything like that in terms of your fan base?
Well, you know, I think I was willing to step into this next chapter knowing that I was trying to make bold statements and step out in a big way. And if not everyone from my past came on that journey with me, that's okay, because, you know, I'm doing what's best for me at this point in my life. And growth is natural. You know, everybody gets older and experiences different things, and I write about those things. And as a stepping off point from there, you know, I hope that, you know, if the word is mature from this one, then we just build on that. And the next record, even if it's lyrically not mature, that it's my heart and showing the growth in me.
How has the fan reaction been, just in terms of what you've seen? What I mean, obviously, Jealous is doing well. People seem to be really taken with this project, but in terms of what you see day to day, what do you experience?
It's evolved in a big way. And I think radio has played a big part in that, you know, because it sort of opened the door for people that would not have given music from me a chance, opened the door for them to take a listen to it, and the reception has been amazing. So looking out in the crowd at these shows and seeing completely new faces and you know, really what was kind of an unexpected audience for a Nick Jonas show. And it's been thrilling to see it grow in that way. And, you know, these have all been kind of cool underplay gigs for more intimate crowds. And I'm hoping I can get out next year and play some bigger shows and, you know, really sort of just take that next step.
I gotta ask about the shirtlessness, man. I gotta ask, because you know what? This song's blowing up, but you are blowing up. Everyone's like, damn, Nick Jonas is ripped. Like, what? So what can you give me, who, you know, I'm not ripped at all. I'm a little flabby. I own it. I'm great. Thanks, man. what, how has this transformation taken place? Like, are you just a complete exercise freak?
No, not at all. Really? I haven't had any time to get to the gym lately. I feel gross, but You know, it was important for the role for the show in the show I'm in called Kingdom, which has also been an insane element for this next chapter. But you know, physicality was a big aspect for the character, and you know, really becoming kind of a monster and being strong. And so, yeah, I gained about 15 pounds of muscle, kept it on, and just went from there. But you know, it's cool. I think that whatever the drivers were to get people to the music. All that matters to me is that they got there, and they did. And if it was that shoot or other things, then that's that. But
were you expecting that at all? Like,
I wasn't expecting it. No, I didn't really think about it too much as we were doing the photo shoot.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I kind of looked back at some of the pictures and was like, "Oh, this is interesting.
This is provocative." But you know what? You're totally right that it did. You know, whatever it takes. People are listening to this album. The Tinashe remix of Jealous is great. How did that come together? Because you guys are on different labels. Did you guys know each other before
we
this came together?
We didn't know each other. Okay. I loved her song. Basically, the way it came up was we were looking for someone to do a feature, and a couple different names came up, and Tinashe came up, and we were all thrilled at the idea. And we heard, you know, after we presented the idea that she loved the song. So she got in and recorded it, and, you know, within a couple days of just the idea coming up, it was done, and then she and I had the chance to do 106 in Park together and a couple different radio shows, and I was blown away. She's an absolute star and such a pro. You know, she hopped up on stage at my Williamsburg show last night without any rehearsal or anything and nailed it and just rolled with it, and the audience was incredible and loved it. And it's great, you know, to have another sort of breath of life into that song, because, you know, for me it's now almost, I don't know, 9 months old.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's... What's crazy about radio and this new world is that there's still a lot of people that haven't heard it. And, you know, even though I feel like it's older news to me, it's continuing to grow.
So thanks again for Nick Jonas for stopping by the Pop Shop Podcast and for beating my ass in ping pong. Check out Nick Jonas, the new album. It's out now. It came out earlier this week. And check out the... Keith, I meant to ask you this. Have you seen the gospel version of Jealous on YouTube?
Not yet.
Oh,
no,
man.
I haven't.
Oh, man.
I'm
you
sorry.
Have to check that out. So, Keith, let's do it, man. We got to wrap it up. It is time for your Chart Stat of the Week.
Hey. Okay, so 40 years ago this week... on November 16th, 1974. So actually, if you're listening to this, you know, not on the 16th, it was slightly ahead of that. Anyway, this week, 40 years ago, John Lennon hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with Whatever Gets You Through the Night. It was his only number one single as a solo artist in his lifetime. And he was the last Beatle to have a solo number one hit on the Hot 100. There's a really interesting backstory that goes along with the song, though. He was recording the song for his, I think it was the Walls and Bridges album, and he recorded it with Elton John. And Elton John was red hot at the time, and on the song, Elton did piano and organ, and he had some background vocals. So when you listen to it, you can hear Elton on the track. And this is sort of a legendary story, and I think people listening might already be familiar with it. But Elton was so sure that this would be a hit single that he said, "Oh, it's going to be number one. It's totally going to be number one." And John Lennon was like, "Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be a hit," because, you know, John Lennon hadn't had a number one yet, and he was kind of hit and miss with the singles.
Sure.
So Elton was super convinced, and he's like, "No, it's going to be number one, and I'm going to make you a bet. If it goes to number one, you have to come on stage with me and play in a show, in a concert." And John Lennon was like, okay, because I know it's not going to go to number one. I'll do that. And then it went to number one on the Hot 100.
Oh, yeah.
He had to make good on his promise, and so on Thanksgiving night in 1974, John Lennon came on stage as a surprise guest at Madison Square Garden, played three songs with Elton John. The crowd went wild. They didn't know that he was going to be there. They had no idea. You know, this is way before social media. And that was actually his last live, you know, in-concert performance. He made a couple, like he had a TV appearance, I think, after that, maybe somewhere. But after that, he never did a proper live concert again. So thanks to a bet with Elton John, we got to have John Lennon on stage one last time with Whatever Gets You Through the Night. That was number one 40 years ago this week, and a great story to go along with it.
Amazing, man. That is an amazing story. All right. Thank you, Keith, for your Chart Stat of the Week. All right, man. That's going to do it for us at the Pop Shop Podcast. Thanks to all listening. Thank you to Nick Jonas again for stopping by to talk about his new music. And tune in next week. I believe we're going to have another pretty cool guest on next week's Pop Shop Podcast. The hits just keep coming, man. Do you have any parting words?
I do not.
We're going to go out on Nick Jonas's new song, Teacher, which is a great song. It's a great dance song. Check it out. Thanks again to Nick Jonas, and take care.
So let me teach you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.